Welcome to St. Dominic's Weekly. This is Father Michael. I am joined by some special guests with me. Today we have with us David and Evan Rossi, joined by little Caleb, who we might be hearing in the podcast at some point, I imagine.
We hope not.
Yeah. Caleb's about to turn 1 year, 1 year old, and so he's we might hear the sounds and the joy of youth coming from him. But I'm so excited to have both Evan and David on this morning because they have quite a powerful story to share, I think, with all of us. And in fact, they themselves offered to do it, I think, very courageously and boldly. Tell a little bit about their life journey in terms of being parents, and in terms of even before that, of meeting each other, and the kind of, if you will, kind of the story of San Francisco for young people who come, who are connected, who want to live lives of faith, and who face a real personal struggle in their life. So welcome.
Thank you.
And welcome back, because right now, you, even though I say you were talking about San Francisco and St. Dominic's, right now you're not living in San Francisco. Where has life brought you in terms of where you are now?
We live just north of Indianapolis, Indiana.
Oh, wow. Okay. Very good. So, and you have family there?
Yes. Evan's parents and brother and sister-in-law and their kids. And my family is from Ohio. So now we are driving distance.
Nice.
To family versus a 4 to 5 hour flight.
On if you're in San Francisco.
When we lived in San Francisco, flying back to the Midwest. Now we live there after 5 years in San Francisco.
Very good. And I know that you mentioned being on the podcast because you are a listener of the podcast.
Yes. So. We are listeners. I actually use it as my commute.
Oh, nice.
I will listen to it as I drive to work. And then if there's a few minutes remaining, I'll listen to it on the way back. It's the St. Dominic's podcast, and it's the Rosary podcast that I'll usually kind of switch back and forth on. And I get the updates on my phone. Like, nice. Usually as I'm driving, oh, there's a new St. Dominic's podcast. Great.
Oh, nice. Oh, very good. So you're a subscriber.
I am
very
a subscriber,
good.
Yes.
And not only subscriber, now you are a guest. So for those faithful listeners, if you have a story that you'd like to share, connect
with Father
me.
Michael.
connect, because I'm always looking for good content and a way to kind of share that joy and how we radiate that joy in so many ways. So just maybe a little bit of a quick intro on kind of your background, where you're from, and your own kind of faith story as it led you to St. Dominic's. First off, yeah, it goes on.
All right, so cradle Catholic, as they say.
Nice. Rossi. Yeah,
strong Italian.
Exactly. It's kind of part of the culture. Is there any other choice for a Rossi, <Right. laughs> at least initially?
Right. So born and raised Catlic.
In Ohio,
in Cleveland. Actually, Jesuit educated through high school. So
I don't know if I knew that.
St. Ignatius High School in Cleveland. Yeah, it's.
Now I'm having second thoughts.
Yeah. I love the Dominican Jesuit rivalry. We always laugh.
It's like sibling rivalry,
right? Yeah.
It's kind of like brothers who are always kind of like giving each other a hard time.
And then. Moved my career. Took me to San Francisco, in the Bay Area, back in 2012. But I mean, been going to Mass. And actually, one of the things that we can get into that when I met Evan is I used to go to Mass based on the closest church to where I lived, just walking distance.
Sure.
And it wasn't until I started dating Evan where she was challenging my faith and. Things and at that point we had actually found St. Dominic's and was very fortunate to live walking distance to this parish, but was this community really helped transform my faith in not to always find the closest church, but to find the church or the community that you connect with, and to take that and run with it. And so what's one of the things that we have been blessed to find recently in Indiana after living there for almost a year now.
Is kind of a spiritual home that
you found a parish that we really connected. We can get in more details there in a minute.
And then Evan, you weren't raised Catholic necessarily?
I grew up in a very faithful home where we were very active in our church group, non-denominational Christian. My dad was actually a minister for some of my time growing up. He's a physician by trade, but a minister by choice sometimes.
Nice.
And I did ministry and a lot of those pieces. But when I moved to San Francisco, I had kind of lost my way in where I was with my faith and was really grateful to meet David, who had the kind of solid base of a Catholic faith and wanted to share it with me. And I, through RCIA and sitting many times in this office with Father Michael, yes, talking through questions.
We did have our questions.
found a way I felt like I could really express the faith, a combination that of the faith I had grown up with and the faith that I was learning through Catholicism. And I've been a faithful Catholic since.
And I will say it's helped me on my faith journey, yeah, as well, because one of the pitfalls that I guess I don't know how common this is, but I fell into it, was just kind of, it's Sunday, got to go to Mass. Okay, yeah, go to confession every once in a while.
Yep.
Kind of just, you know, I don't want to say go through the motions, but at the end of the day, it's kind of what it was a little
checking
bit.
Checking the box.
Checking the box. Oh, big time.
Checking the boxes.
Everything's black and white. Yeah. Follow the rules.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
There's no, and then, yep, she shows up and starts challenging me on all, yeah, this stuff. And I, you know, I didn't have the right answers,
yeah,
or necessarily felt confident in my answers,
yeah,
to, well, why do you do this? What about this? And,
yeah,
I, and so I was like, all right, well, I gotta up my game a little bit.
Yeah. I remember you coming to me actually once, as Evan's like a smile about this, but say, he goes, you know, Father Michael, she's asking me, you know, I don't know. Like I said, so he wasn't asking to give you an answer, Evan, but just for himself. So it's wonderful how that kind of, when we have someone in our life who can push us, challenge us, give us a sense of the whys, and not just, as you say, check the boxes or kind of go through the motions, how powerful it can be. Now, do you remember, I you may not remember this, but do you remember the first time we had an extended conversation ourselves, the three of us?
Oh.
So this is, I remember, because I had seen you, I had met you both. You were definitely talking about the early, you were maybe on the younger side of the early 7:30 Mass when you came to 7:30 Mass. It's usually a little bit of an older crowd, but it's definitely for some people the kind of, come to Mass in the morning and then you're able to watch, like, you know, the Cavs play or the Browns play, right?
Yeah. You're growing up in Cleveland, living in the Bay, yes, Area, yes, recently with the Cavs and the, yeah, Warriors. Yes,
exactly.
You're
there. I didn't mean to bring you down that
it's,
day,
it's
but
fine,
it's kind
it's
of
fine.
Good. But so we had met, but we hadn't had an extended conversation. And I remember I was giving a retreat in Oregon to some of our Dominican laity, and I go, I'm standing in the air, I come in and I got my luggage, and I come in, and of all the places in the whole world, the SFO airport, and that huge long snake line to do security line, and who is in front of me? You,
yeah,
guys,
yeah.
And do you remember why you were there at that moment?
I was going home to meet his family for the first time.
Exactly. It was going to be meet the parents,
yeah,
and the brothers, more to the point.
The siblings, yeah.
The sisters, siblings, yeah, and sisters, meet the siblings. It was a meet the siblings moment. And I remember, honestly, how you were nervous.
I was nervous, yeah. Well, he's the oldest of eight.
Yeah.
And it was also a family wedding we were going to, so,
yeah,
it was cousins and,
yep,
aunts and,
yeah,
uncles.
She's
going to
meet the gambit. Really.
Exactly. Trial by fire. I remember how nervous you were. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I remember being pretty nervous.
Now I remember, and I remember the encounter in the airport. Yeah,
yeah.
Because I mean, when you're
in my habit,
notice.
Yeah, exactly. But I wasn't.
But we were like, "That's Father Michael."
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I felt like I first had an extended conversation. I thought of all the places to have that conversation, and then Jen, obviously, being able to, a privilege from my perspective, and being able to make that journey with you through RCIA and coming into the church and the ways in which you wrote, and then ultimately, to celebrate another sacrament as you were married here.
You married us.
I did. I remember.
We went,
I remember,
through.
Well.
It was pre-Cana.
One of my toughest.
Yeah.
Jobs.
Well, you know, it's funny, it, when we were dating.
Yeah.
We were talking about faith. We didn't know it at the time, but we were going through some of the questions,
yeah,
that you discuss in pre-Cana.
Yeah.
And so when we were going through marriage prep, it was, some of it was like, oh, We've already had discussions about this.
Yeah. So pre-Cana started for us back at the beginning of our CIA.
That's right.
It lasted for a full year.
Exactly. You had the extended program.
Yeah. Right.
Because I remember by the time we started actually doing the official, if you will, or the kind of the preparatory kind of thing, it was like, yeah, we've done that. Let's go.
Yeah.
Move along. We've already made this.
You've been in this office before. We've talked about this topic.
Exactly. We were then. So, we married in 2016, right?
Yeah.
February. Okay. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. So it's, homing up on 2.5?
Yeah. 3 years.
3 years.
In February.
Or 3 years in a couple months. Wow. Does it seem like 3 years?
Oh, it seems like no, and no? Like 1,000 years at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. It's weird. It doesn't feel like 3 years, but it doesn't feel like short or long. I don't know.
Yeah.
Nice. And then in terms of your experience with St. Dominic's and when you were kind of like the young professional life and was it, maybe describe a little bit about your experience there and kind of the energy around St. Dominic's and the different ways you connected here.
Just really enjoyed the really genuine tone that St. Dominic strikes of really the desire to please and honor God, but also how to be honest about how we bring it into our everyday lives. And I think that it can be a challenge to take, you know, what you're reading in the Bible that was written so long ago and how do I apply this on a day-to-day basis. So we always felt I always felt that it was a really great mix between learning ancient truths and incorporating them into our lives. We really found a great home when we were with our small group. And our small group was, we were in that probably the last year, mm-hmm. 6 months that we lived here. So we had been coming to St. Dominic's for a while before we had joined a small group. Yeah. And
the Torch Groups.
The Torch Groups. It was wonderful. I mean, you sit down in a group of people and I don't think I could have handpicked people that I liked better than the group we got put in.
Great
it was
group.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah, and just to be clear for folks who are perhaps not familiar with it, certainly we promote all that. The Torch Group is a small Christian kind of fellowship where, as you say, you talk about principles of faith, or at least in terms of there's themes around Advent and Lent and the Easter seasons. But the whole point of it is how do we live faith now in San Francisco in 2018 and the challenges and struggles and all the rest.
I really like that you could just have, you know, open, honest conversation with peers.
Yeah.
I mean, like talking to priests is great, but like being, other married couples, you know, one of the other couples had a young child.
Yes.
And so kind of like, you know, at talking to them and how they, you know, and then also just like life in San Francisco and how do you live faithfully in this city, you know, and because you can get distracted. There's so much going on here. This is, you know.
And you don't necessarily feel supported by colleagues or people you work
with
or people that you might have other connections with outside of church. You can't assume that your faith life is going to be either understood or even accepted, right?
Mm-hmm.
It can be a challenge for sure in that way. And then when it comes to that sense of kind of you're first married and kind of the joy, maybe describe that step in your relationship. I remember I just remember the reception going out. Your families are a hoot.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, our wedding was that was a fun time.
And yeah,
we actually so both of us we had to pick a wedding date and our family's schedules. It was, you're not supposed to be married in during Lent.
Yes, I remember.
And so
that.
We were coming up on Lenten season.
Yes, not
that
you're
year.
Reminding me of this. Yeah,
and
yeah,
so
yeah.
So we were like, all right, it's either.
The day we got engaged, we started getting texts from our family letting us know when they could not come to San Francisco.
Oh, really?
Including my brother calling me, and he was gracious about it, but he was like, hey, you know, this is good news, but we're pregnant, so if you want your sister-in-law in the wedding, she can't fly like these 3 months of the year, which is exactly when we were hoping to get married.
And then other weddings and other family events, so it was either February 6th or October 1st.
Okay.
Was the gap. 8 months.
Two days.
Oh, my gosh. So we were like, okay, well, we're just going to pedal to the metal.
Yeah.
Get this. We're going to try and find a venue. And
that happened to be the weekend that the Super Bowl was here.
yeah.
in
oh,
the Bay
that's
area.
Right.
So that also added a little yep. bit of hitch, but we were like, you know what? We can't, if we take into account all of our family plus the Super Bowl schedule, we'll be, you know, out of our minds. So.
Yeah, exactly. You just have to do it.
But yeah, so the married life here was great. We found yep. that the Torch group and yep. It was, we felt at home.
We had so much fun.
Yeah.
We really were able to take advantage of what we loved about the city. We had found a lot of great friends here, and we were in a similar stage of life as a lot of our friends, mm-hmm. which was a really fun time for us, where our friends were, you know, settling down with their partners and learning how to be couples and just adjusting to one another, and while enjoying the beautiful outdoors and the really good food here. And it was, when we look back on the first year of our marriage, it just was so much fun. We just really enjoyed each other.
Yeah, no, and certainly being married in the city is a fun place for young couples, kind of experiencing life and all the rest.
Yeah, you know, we were fortunate enough to travel places and just really, I don't know, our faith, we were blessed and to really experience and grow together that in that manner.
And then you get the news.
Yeah, so fast forward.
To
May 2017.
So I'm a planner, yep. and yep. so we've been talking about when we felt like it was right to have a family and yep. how it fits with career. And, you know, so after a lot of prayer and lots of spreadsheets of planning.
Yes. I can imagine the spreadsheets.
We like to have a plan, and we try to
This is true of your professional careers.
Correct,
Involved in very much planning. Like.
Right, yes. I like to, there's... You know, there's a schedule and there's things that you have to execute on and plan on and deliver. And so, you know, why approach life any different?
That's right. No, you know, exactly. That's your strength.
It's my strength. Yeah. So, and then we found we were pregnant, which we were very excited about. Yep.
We had done a lot of praying as we got ready to, mm-hmm. you know, really dive into this process, because a lot of our friends had healthy pregnancies, but they had trouble getting pregnant. Mm. And so that was where we were like, yeah. please help our hearts to be, you know, ready if we don't get pregnant right yeah. away, or, you know, all those different things. So we found out we were pregnant right away. Like, we wow. had no trouble getting pregnant. And so that nice. Was kind of like, oh, and then it only took a couple weeks for it to start getting...
Yeah, so we don't have to go too into the weeds of the details, but
bottom line.
So in May we found out we were pregnant, and then at our first ultrasound,
I was eight weeks pregnant.
This is the beginning of first week of June.
I remember this.
We go in and found out that we were not just pregnant, but pregnant with identical twins.
Well, so we didn't know they were identical at that point. They were just twins, and
that threw us for a loop. Twins don't run in our families.
Yeah, and for Evan, your background is a medical background.
I'm a nurse practitioner.
Yeah, exactly.
So never been a patient before.
Never been a patient. Okay.
So so just knowing that all of a sudden it was different. You know, we weren't gonna. All our friends had their kids and turned their walk-in closets into nurseries.
Yes,
we're like, I don't think two babies will fit in our closet.
I don't know if you remember, but I because you said you were pregnant, and then we had scheduled a time to have dinner, so I mm-hmm. gave over, and I didn't know, and I came over, and I could sense something was going on, and you're like, oh, Father Michael, and I noticed there were a couple books on the table, twins books, and you're like, you're just like, I don't know if we can handle this.
I felt definitely a sense of shock.
Yes.
When we found out it was twins, like I had to sit down in the hospital room because I got lightheaded, and had to really pull it together. This is happening. This is what God wants. We did not see this coming.
Yeah.
How often do you ever really?
Our plan was off the rails.
Yeah,
exactly. At that point.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the derailment of the plan.
That's right. The plan got off the track at P.
Yeah.
Make it right. To the L.
Yeah. Didn't make it to the L. Right.
You're just like, it was right off the rails. So now twins. So kind of a new plan, and this is why I know you had expressed to me that maybe lifestyle and living would have to kind of.
We were change, actually. Yeah. We've always had a desire to. both personally, professionally, just we wanted to move to Europe. And actually, mm-hmm. we were in the process of starting that with my job, my company, and then that all obviously stopped once we found out the news of the twins. And then it was, okay, how do we do this in San Francisco with twins? We were thinking that with one, it was going to impact or shorten our timeline and either force us to move somewhere else a little bit more affordable or to Europe, which is what we were hoping for. And with the twins, we quickly realized and decided that moving back to the Midwest, closer to family and yeah. support would be best, especially because we were then unsure when Evan would return to work, and living in San Francisco on one salary, yeah. supporting four people.
Sure.
Just
two
not.
Two kids in daycare at the same time.
Two kids in daycare. Yeah. I mean, just, yeah, it would have been.
Not going to be feasible. Especially when you have all your families are, you know, in a sense, well connected and provide that sense of community in the Midwest. So.
Yeah. So we pretty quickly decided that we were going to go home. And so we actually purchased a house that we built in the spring, not long after we found out we were having twins, just to kind of get that ball rolling.
Yep.
Knowing that we would, you know, enjoy the extra space. We picked a house that was at that time in the same neighborhood as my brother and sister-in-law and their boys, and 5 minutes down the road from my parents, so that the help would be very close by.
Yes. Yeah, Indiana is a lot more affordable than San Francisco, the Bay Area. That is for sure.
Yeah. And you have built-in Bay. It sounds like it was talk about a plan, built-in strategic babysitting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's yes.
Yes.
That was the goal.
Nice. So then, you're thinking of moving. You've got the pregnancy, and then.
Then the follow-up appointment, the first ultrasound, we found out that they were twins, and then we had a follow-up appointment. And for those who don't know, who may not be familiar with, when you have a twin pregnancy, well, for us, which is our only experience with pregnancy, you go to the doctor for visits a lot more frequently,
sure.
so we're told, than a typical singleton pregnancy. And so we had follow-up appointments a couple weeks later. It felt like we were in the doctor's office every week almost. But
our twins were a specific kind of twins. They're identical twins, and they both share a placenta, which just means that both of them get their nutrients from the same place as opposed to having two different places.
Mm.
And there's a couple big issues that can go wrong with that type of twin specifically, one of which is what our twins suffered from, which was unequal placental sharing. So Caleb had access to more nutrients than Asher did, and that affected how they grew. So then kind of starting from that point, we started seeing the doctors every 2 weeks. We were seen in a specialty clinic for our
high-risk
type
pregnancy.
Of twins. And it was really challenging because we would pray and beg that we could have two healthy boys, and 1 week we'd go in the ultrasound, and Asher, which was our son that had most of the problems, would be growing and things would be okay and we'd be kind of out of the danger zone and Caleb would be doing well. And then 2 weeks later we'd come in and all of a sudden a new thing had happened, or he hadn't grown very much, and we'd be back into being concerned. And so it was kind of this up and down
roller coaster of emotion,
not really knowing, wanting to be faithful but not knowing if we could give our hearts to hope for both. Couldn't plan. Didn't want to even, you know, people, things like scheduling a baby shower was just paralyzing to me because I couldn't. I mean, what if
at the
in
time,
2 weeks I wasn't pregnant anymore? Yeah. What if in 2 weeks I was just having one and not two and it was a twin? But, you know, and so it was a really challenging time because of the uncertainty constantly.
One of the things that I don't think I'll forget is when the first signs of trouble, that very first doctor appointment that where they said we're not sure the viability of one or both, the pain or the suffering that we felt. And I want to make it very clear that we are by no means, you know, through it. We're still learning this and relying on God the whole, you know, but it's a process that I don't think we are anywhere. I don't know if we'll ever be through it. Asher will always be a part of our lives. I think part of the motivation of sharing this story is that we hope and pray that it can help people who may I don't think miscarriages or the loss of life in a pregnancy it's talked about very often.
And so
one of the things that I definitely remember is just the emotional pain hurting so much that the body hurt. And that I had never felt before. And it was a challenge to move and understand and try to understand why this was happening. And we can talk about that because it's what we found is that, and you know, obviously we talked with you a lot on this and on what we were going through, but to not focus on the why. To keep the, I remember speaking with you in the parking lot about why are we going through these troubles with Asher? Why are, you know, the doctors tell us we're going to lose him. We could lose the other one. We could lose Caleb and just, not necessarily finding the value in the why, because there's suffering and pain in around the world. And our suffering and pain, while it's unique to us, isn't a unique feeling, and that there's no benefit or there's no gain from really focusing on why is this happening, because we don't understand.
Why did I deserve this? You know, we're faithful people. We want to raise our sons to love God, and you know,
you gave us two. Why are you taking one away at a minimum,
or both at the time we
weren't sure.
Yeah.
Even the physiologic, you know, we're young, we're healthy.
Yeah.
We've not gone out of our way to damage them in any way. So there's a lot of searching through that.
Yeah. And at this point, so you learned that, they, just to be clear, they're sharing the same placenta, but then the amniotic fluid is the way they're being fed is
so they're mono. It's called mono dye is the short term for it, but they're I'm going to butcher the name, but it's monochorionic diamniotic.
What it means is just that their umbilical cords are both in the same placenta, and where their umbilical cord attaches to your placenta usually doesn't really matter. But in this case, Caleb's head attached, you know, a little bit more towards the center. So his percentage of the placenta, what he was getting was more than what Asher was getting. And we also kind of skipped this, but when you have twins, they're called baby A and baby B based on where they're positioned on the ultrasound. And when we started having trouble, we were grateful for your suggestion to
your
go ahead and name the baby so that way people could pray for them more specifically.
Yeah, tell me about that process. I know I often will, especially, you know, when folks are pregnant, you know, if it, certainly it's up to them if they want to find out gender and things like that, but always encourage them in terms of being able to pray and establish a relationship from the very earliest moments to name them. So maybe talk a little bit about that process for you of naming them.
Yeah. Well, so we found out the genders because they needed to have genetic testing because early on it looked like they may just not be viable at all based on some of the signs they were having.
And so, I had always wanted our first pregnancy, I wanted to be surprised at the birth.
Okay, yeah.
Like I didn't want to know sex, boy or girl. I wanted to be. And then once we found out, I remember driving home from the hospital, once we found out it was twins, and I was like, okay, well, that's out the window. We need to find out. We need to prep and plan as much as possible now.
Here's the prepper.
Planning. The planning's kicking in every moment. Not going to be surprised anymore. So then,
So when it came to naming them, at first we didn't feel totally ready to pick their permanent names.
Yeah.
And so we said, well, maybe we just find an A name and a B name,
and
then we can change them later.
That's what the doctors called them, referred to them as baby A and baby B.
Yeah.
And so we're going through A names and found the name Asher and really love the meaning and the promises that were given to him in the Old Testament.
Yeah. And just to say, who is Asher in the Old Testament? What does the name mean?
It means happiness, mm-hmm. And joy. And there's not a whole lot
he's
mentioned
the
in the
eighth son of Jacob.
Yeah, there's
there you go.
We don't have to go into all those the biblical references, but
there's not a ton mentioned about him, but it is mentioned that, you know, he will prosper and be given happiness and abundance. And so we liked that. And then going through the B names, we just were really uninspired.
I have a brother.
Don't tell Bobby.
Name is Benjamin. We didn't want to start naming after, you know, aunts and uncles.
Sure.
And because then it's, you know,
who do you choose?
Maybe later we will cross that bridge. But right now we are trying to avoid direct relatives.
And so we moved on family to C names because it's next. And Caleb ends with a B, and I've also always loved that name as well, and just the role he plays in being kind of steadfast and faithful in the midst of so much doubting. We liked that they were both Old Testament names. One of the twin books we read suggested that when you pick the twins' names, you go outside and you yell them together to make sure they sound okay when you're screaming for them both.
Oh, we actually never practiced.
Did you really?
Yeah, how to say Asher and Caleb, and we go, okay, that kind of flows. And you know, the books were like, don't name them like Luke and Leia and so we're like, okay, we can
avoid famous pairs.
Famous pairs, like dynamic duo. Yeah. Like,
so then we like the name Caleb, and it means faithful. And actually, their middle name. So Asher's middle name is David, which is beloved. Mm-hmm. And so
and named after you.
And then, but then Caleb's middle name is Francis, which we thought very appropriate, because of San Francisco, Saint Francis. Mm-hmm. And then Saint Francis Xavier. I know he's a Jesuit, but
it's allowed. You get one token nod.
And then Saint Padre Pio, who we actually felt a really strong connection with throughout this process.
We were in Rome on our honeymoon, and his body was actually at the Vatican when we were there.
Oh, really?
And we didn't know much about him.
We didn't plan for that. Yeah. We're like, what's this big line for? Why is the Vatican closed today?
Oh.
Yeah.
It's Padre Pio.
And yeah, we did a bunch of research on him kind of from that, and then actually found out that he is one of the patron saints of unborn babies.
And his first name is Francesco.
Oh, okay.
And so, and then the fourth Francis that we were inspired for was Pope Francis, who we were blessed enough to meet on our honeymoon. And so we felt these connections to all these Francises throughout the history and throughout the church.
Yeah. We didn't know it when we named him, but he would actually be born at a Franciscan hospital.
Yeah, in Indianapolis. Wow. So, yeah, weird. And
Francis is definitely he got his hand on Caleb. Mm-hmm. For sure, no, all the way around. And just because I know I joked about it, but Francis Xavier is a patron saint of missions and missionary. I know you've done mission work yourself, Evan, and in Haiti and places. So there's that sense of calling forth. That's why I thought.
I didn't know that he was the patron saint of the missions. I didn't know.
Yeah, because he was.
I know his story is powerful. Yeah, going to India.
Exactly, going to India and basically baptizing his right arm is in Rome.
And the Jesu.
Exactly.
Right across from where St. Ignatius is buried, actually, in that side altar.
That's right.
It's it's in like a glass case, and you can see the bone. It's kind of check it out.
Prepare yourself. Yeah, saints' relics and even those who are incorrupt. I look at Catherine of Siena, total tangent, but I'm like, oh boy, that's not exactly incorrupt. I think they as if they're living. They're not exactly looking like they've just fallen asleep.
There's
definitely a little bit of a little more like mummification than that sense. But so the Francis is really kind of coming. So so you found naming them even before they were born to be very spiritually powerful for you.
It was, and I think. So we kind of decided we were going to pick temporary names, and then found that we really liked the names that we picked. And we were even really grateful that in the medical community, which part of their role, right, is to stay kind of out of what your total decision, they're trying to give facts and mm-hmm. not add in too much emotion. We were really grateful because all of our doctors were happy to call them by their names.
Nice.
And that meant a lot to us too. Mm-hmm. And especially even more so now, people ask, you know, what they can do for us. And one of the things is I still want to talk about Asher, mm-hmm. and some people feel uncomfortable. They're like, oh, we don't want to bring up anything for you, but he's my son, and I love him, and I think about him every day. And so when people say his name, it's very special to me.
Yeah. No. Can you, because he's, as we believe, right? It says we celebrate the feasts of all saints and all souls. We know that those who have died are not, our relationship has changed but not ended. Right. And so to talk about that, maybe to step back, if you don't mind it, just because I think part of, at least for myself, part of the power of journeying with you as much as I was able to accompany was at key moments when the doctors were just giving different alternatives of how to proceed. And I just, I remember, you know, it's so, they're impossible choices to make almost, right?
They were, so, I remember sitting with you because we, you know, obviously weren't looking at any kind of abortion alternative, but the doctors say, hey, this is...
Yeah, just to lay out the different, just for folks, lay out the different options that
were... So the different options were, because they shared their placenta, that also means that their blood supply is shared. Mm-hmm. So they're very, their
very
fates
connected.
Are very connected.
Yeah.
And so Asher had started to really fall behind, and the
growth-wise,
risk with growth, and the risk with that was if he were to die, that... chance of Caleb dying as well, just because of how they're connected, was about 30%. So it's
33. It was 33% that once Asher, we at this point we knew that Asher was going to not survive.
Yeah.
And so the doctors told us.
Sorry to correct, but at that point when we were making this decision, we didn't know that. He was starting to fall behind some, but it wasn't a very clear, and like I had said before, it was kind of up and down.
Up and down,
so
there was 33% chance that if Asher passed, that Caleb would also pass, which was a challenging, a third.
Yeah.
33% chance that if Asher passed, that Caleb would have permanent brain damage.
Because of how their blood flow is connected, essentially would suffer a stroke in utero because of not having blood flow
to his
brain.
Him.
Yeah.
And then a 33% chance that he would come out and be okay. Mm-hmm.
So the options, as things started to look a little worse with Asher, were you could go in and you could do a selective termination where you would, which would, in theory, help protect Caleb from those other two outcomes, but that
still high risk.
Still in the procedure
and
itself,
very intrusive.
Is still high risk.
Yeah, that
wasn't a guarantee that either of them would make it through. And part of that too, there was an option of actually kind of trying to separate. In very layman's term, kind of separate out the placenta a little bit, so their fates wouldn't be as tied, which meant that they're in a theory that both of them could live through it, but also both of them could not live through just the procedure.
Fraternal twins,
one
of the benefits of that type of twins is they each have their own placenta and amniotic sacs.
Mm-hmm.
Identical twins, our types of identical twins, shared. And so there was procedures or options to potentially cut the placenta. So they would each have their own, in theory, so that Asher could survive. But very, very high risk.
Yeah.
And then the option too of not intervening, to continue to let the kind of things take its course. And we had to really struggle because you feel like either way you're choosing one of your children, right? Because if we chose Asher and chose not to intervene, were we not choosing Caleb because we weren't protecting him from outcomes that we knew were very high possibility? And then also, if we were to choose Caleb, then are we not giving God a chance to work and heal and allow Asher to grow? And we struggled a lot with that decision and back and forth, and really grateful, I think, for our medical team being very patient with us, and then also having spiritual resources to try to find out how we could, because it felt like we couldn't live with any decision.
Yeah.
Because with the outcome, we just didn't know. Would we always regret if, you know, and if we made a decision and the outcome was terrible, you know, and all these pieces.
Ultimately, we decided to rely on God and say, we're not going to intervene. Mm-hmm. We came to, I mean, over a period of time, we came to peace part, to with that decision.
Right. Yeah. We decided not to intervene, but knowing that in many sense that it wasn't the only way to rely on God. Because that's the other thing is, does God give us medicine to allow us to, you know? And so we decided for us, the way we were going to be faithful and rely on God was that we were choosing not to intervene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was definitely a choice.
And making that delineation was a big deal for us. Yeah. It wasn't, we weren't doing nothing. Yes. We were choosing not to intervene. So we were still making a choice.
Yeah. And how powerful in being able to accompany with that, that was really what struck me. And what I took away from it was that feeling that, how can we not do something? I remember having that conversation. We want the best for both of them. We don't know. And I mean, certainly we know by our faith that, you know, terminating a pregnancy is not supporting life. But at the same time, you think, well, it's helping the other one. So, you know, are we not choosing the, you know, you're in this impossible kind of
not a
dilemma,
great situation that nobody wants to be in.
And then, and as you said, Evan, though, that real moment, I think of inspiration and insight by saying, by choosing to let nature go, it's not as if we're not doing anything or we're doing nothing. We're saying God gave us these twins. He gave us Asher and Caleb. God knows this dilemma every bit of as much as we do. And so our choice is to allow God to do what he wants in our plan, that big plan that you had talked about earlier. It's out the window. It's a long way off
you
the rails.
You have to, I don't right? want to use the word submit.
Yeah.
But you have to, one of the things that I struggled with was trying to come to terms with his plan, God's plan.
Yeah.
Which, if you approach it from the perspective of God is perfect, his plan is perfect.
Yeah.
Well, our plan definitely would not have been this, his plan, which was to give us the twins and then to take Asher.
Yeah.
And so that, I mean, we're talking about it now, but in that process, over that span of weeks and months, we struggled. We relied, we had to rely on conversations with you and with family and prayed a lot. And it was, I mean,
There were masses offered for them all over the country. Yes. And people were praying
all over
the world.
Actually.
Yeah. You mobilized the priory here and different places. The prayer warriors I know, everyone was praying for you in that way. And what struck me too is, as and you mentioned this before, especially when we're, you know, facing impossible really decisions and struggling and suffering, that there is a way in which investing our energy into trying to gain God's perspective to answer the why question is not the most important thing at that moment, right? I mean, we don't have access. I mean, this is kind of that, I know you were very, at that time, connected with the book of Job. If you've never read the book of Job, it's one of those, it's a classic story of how we deal with suffering. And at the very end, God kind of says to Job, when Job says, "Hey, I want to draw you into court and have a hearing," almost like put God on trial, like for these awful things that have happened to myself and my family and so forth. And God simply says, "You know, where were you when I created the universe and the world? Like, my perspective is greater than yours." And the question is not to be able to understand the why. And frankly, anyone who would give you a reason why or say, "Oh, well, this good came out of it," that's either superficial, you know, either a little bit patronizing or just flat wrong. Like even now, as we're talking about, anyone who would tell you or give you a reason why, you know, Asher is no longer physically with us, I think would be that would be a failure. Like we have no idea why right? But there's that sense, as you say, of kind of trusting.
We had to trust in the plan, in God's plan.
Yeah.
Even if it didn't align with ours, which I tend to be type A and like control.
We're getting that sense.
Yeah.
Our listeners.
And, which is true. And so really just letting go.
Yeah.
And you know, it. We went to Mass a lot when we were going through this, and there was a few, and I don't tend to do this, but sometimes when I really connect with the homily, I'll take my phone out and I'll jot notes down. I feel like the other people in the church think I'm just like texting or something. It's really, I'm not texting. I'm taking.
You're not playing words with friends.
Right, yeah, yeah. But, you know, because I don't really bring a notepad into Mass, right? I really want to remember that message. And so I jotted, there's a few things.
I remember this. This was in September.
Yeah, September. When you're going... because we... We lost Asher in September, actually, real quick. So viability, a lot of times, and this is where I think instrumental in our prayers were that if God was going to give us Asher, we wanted him to be healthy and live life, and viability for life, if they can induce, is 24 weeks of pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Now, there will be a lot of risks and a lot of, you know, complications typically with that.
Yeah, a lot of complications, and the chance that they can be healthy is small. They can, and medical science has pushed it more and more forward, but it's not an easy road by any stretch. I mean, they're you know, just barely half cooked at that point, right?
Exactly. So. You know, you want to give every, I mean, there's some, nature does what it does. So you want to let nature take that.
Yeah. And the part with, if Asher would need to be delivered, Caleb would have to be delivered as well, because there wasn't a way to separate them. And, I think something that struck us during that time that looking back now, I'm grateful for is that even in Asher's loss, I think God was protecting us because we lost him.
23 weeks and 6 days is when the doctor's appointment was. But I think we had lost him the day before.
2 days before viability. So it wasn't an option to deliver Caleb because it was too early. It wasn't an option to deliver Asher. I felt like, you know, it was at one moment it was, we were so close. We were almost there. But then also the protection that I think that provided, that it actually got us off the hook of having to try to force them to live outside the womb early. Yeah.
So just that moment. So you make the choice, as you say, to say, okay, God, they're in your hands. They're your twins. You gave them to us. And then
we went through two ultrasounds, so about a month where it was looking okay.
Yeah.
And it wasn't perfect.
Yeah.
It was still high risk, but it was looking okay. And so we thought, okay, maybe, you know, we've made the right decision. Yeah, like there was a right, you know, the right or wrong, made the right one.
Yes.
And then I'll never forget, we had an ultrasound on a Monday, which was odd for us. So it's coming in from work, and really just at that point, I mean, we were almost there. We were almost at 24 weeks. So I was feeling really hopeful, and we had really let ourselves start to hope that we were going to have the two boys. Mm-hmm. And they sat down with us and said that there's been significant shifts. And while Asher was currently alive, the chances that he would be alive by the end of the week was almost nothing. Mm. And so I think that...
Which is really hard to hear and to really... like digest to tell the doctors say that your son is less than a week to live.
And that moment too, where we knew that for the next week we were going to be wondering if Caleb would also either be injured or pass with Asher or not. So we had that was on a Monday, and we scheduled an ultrasound for Friday where they could essentially confirm that we had lost Asher. And we just had that week to try to grapple with what was kind of feeling like was just coming totally apart.
And that's where I think the homilies and what I jotted down my phone, I think were very helpful. That
What were some of those things that
there was so there was three messages that again we connected with, I think, because we had spoken about them together after Mass, but that one of the homilies was that every encounter with the cross, meaning a struggle or suffering of some kind, is an encounter with Christ's victory. there is no spiritual growth without suffering, which that message, when you're suffering, it doesn't feel like you're growing. I don't know if it's still, no. I don't even feel like it's, you suffer and you're like, this, how does this help? Like, yeah. You know, but then it ties back to the why. Like, yeah. And you're not meant to, you know, we don't even understand the why, but it's in the moment of the suffering and the pain, it sure doesn't feel like growth.
Yeah.
Or how is this helping save my soul?
Sure. Yeah. No. The experience of suffering and the reality is growth. And that's a tough, that's a spiritual principle, but that's not an easy principle, not comfortable principle of spiritual life.
And the third, the one that I thought was powerful was that people trip over the cross when they suffer. Mm. And if they don't have faith or a sense of faith or belief in God, they may not realize it.
Mm.
And if they have faith, they will rely and trust in God to help them.
Mm.
And I thought that was powerful. Gave me, you know, made me very thankful for my faith and to move out of that temptation to question God and why was this happening,
mm-hmm.
and just to rely on Him and trust in Him to get us through this.
Mm-hmm. We definitely had our share of anger.
Yeah.
Oh, it wasn't just we accept this God that, you know, if we could be that pious it'd be great, but
How did that just describe, because I think most people think like, and you're talking now, we're talking and it's like, oh, such a faithful couple, everything, but no, there
we
was
were,
anger
we were mad.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Remember, yeah,
I remember talking to you after the mass in the beginning of the parking lot. We're like I'm pissed.
Yeah,
I'm,
I remember that.
Why? Like, I'm mad at God.
Yeah,
the Lord's Prayer was really hard to say. Because you just say those words, you know, may your will be done. And you think, I don't want to say that today.
Yeah.
Because I don't want your, you know, I don't agree and I don't understand. And I'm hurt and I'm sad. And I think it was particularly really challenging. It was challenging for me because they were still so small that I wasn't feeling them.
Mm.
And so it was an internal struggle with the fact that I knew I was pregnant, but I wasn't feeling them. And
physically, you mean?
Physically, yeah. I wasn't feeling them kick.
They hadn't kicked yet. They were small.
And so the day before we lost Asher and the day after we lost Asher, it physically felt the same. And that was hard for me because I couldn't feel, I wanted in a weird way to feel physical pain because there had been a death.
Yeah.
And also at the same time, while we were angry and mourning, it was our responsibility to be focused on being not only faithful, but being, you know, healthy for our living child. So we, so it kind of, to fast forward, we on that Friday after this kind of hellish week, which actually looking back was a really special week because we took a lot of time to go to our favorite places in San Francisco and pray and just, you know, we talked to the boys and say, you know, we're doing these things as a family. Mm. We went to the place where David asked me to marry him and we watched a sunset on the beach. And even though it was terrible, it was a really, it was one of the most special weeks. And that Friday we went in for the ultrasound and Asher had died and Caleb was still alive.
Mm.
And that mixture of emotions too, because you're devastated and happy at the same time. It's it's
you still have new life,
yeah,
but with a loss of life,
yeah,
and a loss of all the things we had expected, what it was going to be like to have twins, what it was going to be like for them to grow up as brothers, the loss of everything. I think that's the hard part about loss during pregnancy is you're not losing someone you've loved because of all your interactions. Mm-hmm. You're losing all of the interactions you were going to have with them. Mm-hmm. And so his baptism, his marriage, his graduation, we, in that moment, we lost our future with our son and, you know, kind of balancing
that, that immense loss with, okay,
well, the immense joy,
that Caleb's still with us. And then it was, okay, well.
And pretty quickly we found out that he was looking good. We had a fetal MRI, which was a crazy thing.
Yeah, baby MRIs, fetal MRIs are nuts.
I mean, I just had to sit in an MRI machine because the point of an MRI is you have to be still, right? But you can't tell the baby to be still.
Yeah,
exactly. And so I just had to sit in the MRI for 2 hours.
Oh my gosh.
They're just in there in this little tube where they're trying to get a picture of his brain.
Oh my goodness.
But they eventually got it.
Did they get it? Okay,
they got it and it looked great.
Showed no signs of brain damage.
Yeah.
And so we were very blessed. And this is now we're at the end of September.
Yeah.
And then we thought we were done with
the hardships
and the challenges.
Not the mourning.
Not
but
the mourning,
maybe
but
the
okay, there's no more, there's not going to be any more hiccups.
Yeah.
Because we had been told essentially at this point you can have what we would describe as a typical
singleton pregnancy.
Okay, because everything was, in terms of all the nutrients and the growth and everything, was going to be
Caleb had been always doing really well. He was our steady guy.
Yeah, yeah. And then?
And then we go in for another doctor's appointment.
Well, at the doctor's visit where we lost Asher, my blood pressure was elevated, which makes sense, right?
Yeah. I wonder what was going on in your life to cause that.
Right? Yeah.
But they, you know, wanted to watch it and do some lab work. And of course, my lab work came back just slightly off and my blood pressure continued to stay. I was never, the hardest part too was the ambiguity. My blood pressure was never in the upper limits of where you say this is an issue. It was always just teasing, before,
teasing that. Okay, okay.
Same with my lab work. So at that point, they decided to, I should be admitted to the hospital, which is not where you want to be when you're mourning the loss of your son, to just sit in the hospital and also constantly be reminded that you're pregnant. I know that sounds funny because we were still so happy about Caleb, but to be so focused constantly on his health was I guess it was a blessing and a curse because it was a distraction, but it also kept us from being able to kind of truly mourn.
Yeah.
And just the labs and the tests that they were telling, they were running, we were essentially at risk for preterm labor, for delivering Caleb earlier than
prematurely.
Yeah. We were still holding out that we at this point we lost Asher, but now we wanted to take Caleb to term.
Yeah.
You know, so that he could, and so when Evan was admitted, it was okay. Well, now these are the risks of what's going on with her body in the womb, and now we may need to deliver because now her life is in danger with the diagnosis that we were eventually given.
Possibly. I mean, it was always kind of like, this could mean this or it couldn't. So it was.
But it was just weird.
But it was scary. I remember that.
Well, because, I mean, they were like, we need to keep you in the hospital. Yeah, we need to watch you under.
Yeah.
Because, and so at this point, we were. Okay, we need to go. We need to go back to Indiana. We need to
because at this point, remember, our house is being built.
I know. I did remember that because I remember saying to David as we were driving back from the hospital, like, well, where was this on the plan? Let's change.
Wait, not no zero
in terms of job, house,
so my
pregnancy. Yeah. You know, and complicated pregnancy three times over, and now you're going to fly? How are they going to let you on the plane?
Well, so my company was gracious enough to where I was able – we have a major office in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
So they were able to move me, and it was great from a career perspective. So that was one less. Oh, there's the baby.
Yeah.
And so Evan, when we were in the hospital here and going through this – going through this roller coaster, we had decided that we needed to move back to Indiana, and we signed out of the hospital against medical advice, which
I remember
is never comforting.
No.
The doctors read you the list of risks and why you shouldn't do this, and you say, okay, I understand. I'm still going to get on an airplane and be in the air for 4 hours or so.
So flying, I had no increased risk because of flying. It was simply that for 3.5 hours, I'd be away from medical care if I were to go into labor.
Okay.
So it was just the risk. And I had been sitting in a hospital feeling totally fine for a week and a half at this point. And so it was kind of like, why is it that the 4 hours I sat here and no one came in to see me different than the four hours
I'd on
be
the
in
plane?
The plane.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just simply that you just have to get there and not going to labor on the plane.
Okay, so you just got to hold out. You got to hold out for the 4 hours.
And I think there's just so much challenge, too. Yeah. I mean, in anyone who's been in the hospital or in a complex situation like that, to be away from your family is hard. And my mom had flown out to be with us. But just the support you can have if they're all there is really great. So we were pretty eager to head out. And decided that it was the right time for us because we wanted to do it as quickly as we could, because like, the further you get in pregnancy, yeah, you know,
the more likely you are also. And so we hopped on a plane the next day, and we flew to Indianapolis on October 18th.
We took a very stress-free flight. Yeah. We got to the airport very early, and I just had, you know, 3.5 hours. I think my mom was probably watching on the screen that, you know, you can see where a flight is.
Trackers. Yeah, exactly.
She was probably just watching the whole time trying to see what
I mean, having met your mom in New Orleans, she's definitely was doing the track.
And so we landed without issues, which we were very thankful for.
Sure. You know?
And then we were had a doctor's appointment the very next morning, first thing.
We're really blessed that my family was able to coordinate our medical care while we were still here there. Mm-hmm. And so we had doctors lined up. We landed at 7 p.m. and I had a 7 a.m. doctor's appointment.
And then we were readmitted into the hospital there. Right saw the there. Same stuff that we were seeing same in San Francisco.
And so all of a sudden you were there. Now
we're in Indianapolis.
In Indianapolis.
And we're at the hospital there. And we were in the as patients there for throughout the rest of the pregnancy. So this
has been another month or so.
October 19th through Evan. Well, we gave birth to Caleb and Asher on November 21st.
On 21st, yeah.
And then Evan was discharged as a patient on Thanksgiving Day.
Oh, wow. But he was two months early, he was in the NICU.
So Caleb was in the NICU until early January.
Okay.
And so he was born 3 pounds, 4 ounces, 15 and a half inches tall or long. And but he was a healthy baby by all accounts. And
didn't require a lot of breathing help or anything like that. So it was really a blessing in that he was early, but he's always been really strong and really tough.
Nice. Yeah. And if his physical activity, which you can't necessarily appreciate on the podcast, but he's right now as David literally juggles him and Evan is preparing his meal as we're chatting here.
Making sure he doesn't grab anything because he's at that age where he will try and chew anything he can reach.
Exactly. He looks to be very happy and alive and active. He's looking good and smiling at me now. Oh, very good. So in terms of just, I don't know, this whole process, it's hard to, you know, kind of, I want to say summary kind of thing, but the occasion for you coming back is certainly to here at St. Dominic's we have the columbarium, that is places for folks remains to be buried, and we have a memorial wall where we enshrine literally the names of loved ones who have passed away. And I know Asher's name is on our memorial wall.
He is.
And I know even this morning, every first mass of the day, the 6:30 mass, we pray for all those who are find the final place of rest here, who are named on our memorial walls, and especially for our young ones like Asher. There's that hope that we certainly have in Christ that they're already experiencing the joy of where we want to be. There's already a little Saint Rossi.
You called us right. Saint Makers one day.
I did. Mass,
and I kind of chuckled, and I was like, I think it was when I was telling you I was angry at God.
Yes, I did.
Like, you little Saint Makers. Like, I'm still not happy about it.
I know. Well, I was thinking there's anger, and that's appropriate, and it would be strange if you weren't angry. That's why. But at the same time, that's what we believe.
The joy.
There's the sorrow and the joy at the same time, the anger and all the rest. Well, one of the things that I often will, and our faith often gives us, is at least one point to make is wherever we're at emotionally, just to let it be, just to notice as very human. And oftentimes our emotions are very appropriate, and we shouldn't think that there are only certain emotions that are appropriate for our spiritual life, kind of quote-unquote positive emotions or something like that. But if you will, the quote-unquote negative emotions of anger and frustration and not understanding and anxiety and fear, if we look at the Psalms of David, for example, we know that that's the emotional place that we find people inspired by the Bible to write in that emotion, but not to necessarily stay in that emotion, but to be able to let that emotion be, to experience it, And as you were saying before, to that sense of trust, you just keep coming back to that, that choice to make, to say, okay, Lord, I've got no idea, but I'm going to continue to walk. And so in terms of your own, where you are now, and I just thank you for just sharing and being so open about how you, and certainly knowing that, I know you don't want to communicate that you've got all figured out.
We have, like, do not have this like figured out.
And you're some kind of exemplar for other couples who have lost some days, young ones.
Some days, all of the things that I feel like I've learned are just reverted, and yeah. I'm just back to being mad yeah. or sad.
Yeah.
And then other days, it feels like this, the true, that peace that passes understanding. And yeah. it just, it's a day-by-day battle.
Yeah. Are there things where are you with it now? Like what
so I
kind of emerges for you we, at this point? It's been about a year.
So this is the reason why we're back in yeah. San Francisco is yeah. for the Requiem
That's
Mass.
Right, for the Requiem Mass, yeah.
So Asher's name will be read at the Requiem Mass. So very special for us, mm-hmm. And that's the whole reason why we're back.
And kind of a little bit of closure, maybe, huh?
Yeah, we would definitely. We'll feel that because we skipped town essentially when yeah. we moved out, right? We didn't yeah. get to say goodbye to any of our friends or family in the area, and had to, all of a sudden we woke up one day and we're in Indiana.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, where are you? Huh? Not in California anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
But now with our, this is a recent development, but we found a faith home, a parish in Indianapolis, in a suburb that we really connected with. And I think that was one of the learnings, especially for the young professionals who may be living in the city and then want to or eventually find themselves in a situation where they need to leave
yeah.
and move to a more affordable place.
Which is unfortunately the case.
Unfortunately the case here. It's hard to live here. As great as when we miss St. Dominic's dearly, we wanted to find somewhere that I never want to say replace, but that we could connect in a similar way or felt that same sense of connection to God.
Yeah. Spiritual home. Yeah.
And we had gone to, so we are no longer just finding the closest church.
Yeah.
Now we are exactly. shopping around. Yeah. And there's Caleb, very excited
eager.
About this.
Ooh, eager.
And So in the time since we've been in Indianapolis, we found a parish that we connected with, that we went to a family food truck and had a conversation with the pastor there that was very inspiring.
Nice.
And he just
more of a personal connection to personal our story than to many our story. Can offer. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
And was asking us questions that most people wouldn't necessarily know.
Yeah.
About twins, and it was just a sign. I think you were one of the other priests here talking about yeah. encounters with the Holy Spirit.
Yeah. God moments.
God moments.
yeah.
And
yeah.
It just
yeah.
felt very. It felt like a God moment.
Yeah.
And it felt like an encounter, and this was a sign that we needed to be. This is where our faith home was going to be.
Yeah, and I would say especially for folks who, and it's one of the wonderful parts about the city is there's so many young adults here, that, like you said, young professionals. But what happens oftentimes, and I feel this loss, is I get to meet folks like yourself. They get married, they start having children, and then they leave, right? Because for financial reasons, for, you know, family reasons, for so many reasons. And so they're like, oh, you know, I can't find the same thing as Saints. There's no St. Dominic's where I am. And so my's like, well, go out. You have to make the effort to find a spiritual home, because certainly as you
It took months.
Grows upon, yeah.
I mean, it was not family, a quick
yeah.
process.
Yeah.
So
I think you asked where we're at as well.
Yeah.
And I think
yeah, in terms of even
any women listening who become yeah. first time moms yeah. know that it is a trip. I mean, it's
yeah.
both the most wonderful and the hardest, most emotional, fulfilling and lonely thing that I have ever done, let yeah. alone our issues.
Sure.
And I think through this past year, I know I've really gone through the continuing to mourn and feeling like my relationship with God was centered on how I was going to handle my loss and mm-hmm. how I was going to trust God again and how I was going to feel safe with Him again. And nothing has like been a total aha moment. The scripture that my ways are not your ways, my thoughts are not your thoughts, have really resonated with me, that I'm going to just need to sit in a lack of understanding, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But I also feel like God gave me kind of the breathing room. Because I don't know how much I could have done when I'm not sleeping with him and dealing with all the emotions of just being a mom, let alone that. That he gave me, I feel like, about a year. And about a month ago, I started having some God moment encounters with a mom's group I was in and suggestions for a Bible study and a book that connected me to an author, actually a Catholic author, that she lost her identical twin girls. And just kind of this idea like, okay, Evan, like, we've been here, we've both been sad, but it's time for us to keep moving together through this journey. And I feel like he's wanting to continue to teach me how to be a patient, loving mom and wife, and that we can, we've had our space. And now,
and the Lord's given you that sense of like, he really, time and healing and that's going on.
Like, it was kind of like you were saying, that there's not only that your relationship with God isn't only positive emotions. And I feel like he gave me time to just kind of sit in my sadness a little bit. He was still caring for me and meeting my needs, but I've gotten a little bit of a jolt recently, like, you know, you don't have to pretend like this didn't happen, but it's time to stop sitting in your sadness and start being a little bit more active.
You kind of nudge you a little bit.
And even I think this is, David really encouraged us to do this in a way of moving forward, in that you don't go through things just for yourself. You can go through to help.
To share that story,
others. Our nurse actually.
If the loss of Asher can help anybody, or save one soul,
One of our nurses at the hospital. So we delivered in this special room where they have deliveries when you're going to have a loss, and they do an amazing job of caring for us and loving us. But one of our nurses was a woman who said, "I request to be in this room because I myself had a stillborn baby in this room, and it's my job to care now for women who are in that spot," and how personal that can be. And
Kiel found the microphone.
Found the microphone. He's reaching for it. So, and if you would, I mean, I think Caleb's letting us know that we might be coming to the end. We've been detective. But if there's any, I know that one of your the things that you really wanted to kind of communicate was for those who themselves have lost young ones. What would you say to them to kind of maybe encourage them or let them know in their own experiences you've experienced?
I think first and foremost that it's okay to actually really mourn. I feel like it seems it's so easy to make miscarriage or the loss of unborn baby seem like less than the loss of a child, like that you would lose if you had birthed them and known them, but it's not. And that it's absolutely okay to embrace that feeling of loss, and whatever you need to do, whether it's connecting, you know, naming your child or having a special place or something you're doing for them. Or whatever it is, that it's okay to mourn.
And it's not only okay, it's needful,
it's
right?
It's needed,
You have to mourn for that loss,
It's, and it's not less. Just because I told David this once, you know, I'm so sad that I'm never going to, you know, make Asher a peanut butter sandwich. Or, you know, that I'm never going to pack his lunch or buy him school clothes. But really coming to the grasp that I'm not any less of his mom because I'm not doing those things. Just because I'm not going to be teaching him necessarily about his faith, I'm still his mom. And letting those truths be constant truths, I think, has been really helpful. And you just got to find people that are safe to rely on. I know we found safety and help here, and we have lots of friends who are praying and helpful, but not everyone's safe either.
That's the other thing, right.
Don't have to talk to everyone.
Exactly, yeah. And there's a sense in which there's, you know, appropriate boundaries for different things like that.
And so, I think, you know, for me, it's you know, when we pray with Kayla, we still, you know, we, you know, pray for Asher and his, you know, soul and salvation, and ask him. We ask him to pray for us and watch out for, especially watch out for his brother.
Exactly,
and be with
mischievous.
Him.
Mischievous.
Yeah.
Is it true that Caleb looks like Evan but has your mischievousness? Is that the word on the street? Is that the word on the street?
Grandparents and family members. That's the word. We're noticing it more and more too.
That's what I'm noticing right now.
Yeah. He looks like his mom but acts like his dad.
There you go. But no, that sense of kind of community. And
yeah, and I think, I don't know, the biggest takeaway is that for me in this process is, and it's not easy by any means, for me at least, is to surrender the plan or the thoughts that I think I have and submit to God's plan, even if that plan involves the loss of life.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, we have, you know, we're blessed enough to have Caleb with us, and he is a miracle, especially with the odds that the doctors were giving us. And so, to just surrender your, try to surrender my will to God and rely on Him, especially when I'm struggling, and it is not. That's a lot easier said than done.
It is, and I maybe to say that final word is kind of what you said, Evan. That if we are able to pray the Lord's Prayer, your
and mean
kingdom
it.
Come,
yeah.
Your will be done. That's, if you will, that's all you need, and to really live that in that way. So I think Caleb is letting us know we need to round this up. So I hope this podcast for those listening has been hopefully inspiring. Thank you so much, Evan and David, for being with us, and you too, Caleb. Thanks for being with us this morning, and may all that you do this week truly radiate the joy of the gospel here in the heart of the city. Amen.
Amen.